Tony raised both hands at the sealed hatch and blasted it open. He thrust his head outside and looked downward. A scarlet figure was climbing down the wall, scuttling closer to the sidewalk far below. Light from a street lamp glinted off its metallic and human form.
Oh my God. What have I done to him? What have I done to all of them? Magnify image.
His helmet lenses hesitated, not long, but worrisome nonetheless. Then his vision zoomed out and down, centering automatically on Spider-Man. The wall crawler's mask was torn, his mesh suit dotted with dents. Blood dripped from his chin. He touched down unsteadily on the sidewalk, then sprinted toward a manhole. Tony tensed to leap, issuing a warm-up command to his boot jets.
Boot jet efficiency 56%. Armor integrity compromised. Vision systems 72%. Joint motive systems compromised by foreign liquid.
Spider-Man's webbing. It had spread all through his armor, gumming up all the mechanical systems.
Damn, if only I'd redesigned the damn webbing when I built the rest of his suit.
He'd have to change to a spare Iron Man suit before going after Peter, if there was still a suit left intact in the workshop. Dust hovered everywhere, and the cordite smell of spent shells covered the dull odor of burning electronics. The workshop was a disaster. Shattered computers, broken Iron Man suits, workbenches, and power packs cracked and dented everywhere. Hundreds of thousands worth of damage, maybe millions. Maria Hill wore tight black fatigues, body armor, and sunglasses, but no helmet.
So, your pet insect has abandoned the hive.
Arachnid.
What?
Not insect, arachnid. Nothing. Never mind.
Tony crossed to a cabinet riddled with bullet holes.
I'm going after him, assuming your men haven't destroyed all my equipment.
Oh, excuse us for trying to save your life.
He bent down to touch a cabinet lock and stumbled, nearly fell.
I don't think you're going anywhere, Sergeant.
A burly shield agent bent down to help him.
I'm all right.
I think you've got a busted knee, maybe worse.
She was right, he realized. The armor was holding him up, preventing him from realizing the extent of the damage. Spider-Man had a rep as one of the most powerful superhumans on Earth. That was one reason Tony had recruited him in the first place. Now he had first-hand proof.
Director Hill, authorization Alpha. Activate Project Thunderbolt.
No!
Operatives 4 and 6 sending coordinates now. Target, Spider-Man.
No! I've got this!
Tony slumped into a chair.
With respect, Stark, you do not have this. Nor do you command S.H.I.E.L.D. This is my call.
Tony lifted his faceplate and looked up at her.
Don't hurt him.
Don't worry. I won't put another death on your bleeding heart conscience, if I can help it.
You won't put another death on our conscience at all. The registration movement does not need that kind of publicity.
I'm sorry your little arachnid disappointed you, Stark.
A S.H.I.E.L.D. agent appeared at her side, holding a comm device with a USB cord hanging off it.
Now, shall we watch the show? There's got to be a video screen still working somewhere in this mess.
5 minutes later, the dust had thinned and an area of the floor had been cleared of debris. The workshop's holoprojectors were trashed, but a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent stood tuning in a blurry picture on a flat screen. Another agent had set out folding chairs around the screen. Tony sat in shorts and a work shirt, while a S.H.I.E.L.D. medic taped up his knee.
We're go!
Hill touched her shoulder comm.
This is a 60-minute trial only. Invisible mode essential. Operation Thunderbolt is still top secret. Are all nano-sanctions in effect?
Yes, Director.
Location trace active.
On the screen, a map appeared, showing the winding maze of Manhattan's underground sewer system. Two blips, labeled 4 and 6, moved swiftly along the tunnels.
I've got the T-bolts locked, but Spider-Man's deactivated the GPS tracker in his suit. Pulling up a best guess now.
A red and gold blip began to flash, showing Spider-Man's approximate location, several twists and turns ahead of the other blips.
I knew we couldn't trust that guy.
Don't sound so happy about it. I shouldn't need to remind you what the Thunderbolts are, Hill. Supervillains.
Former supervillains, who've been duly registered with the government and trained in an intensive crash course. They've been chipped, tagged, and injected with nanomachines that allow us to control their behavior absolutely.
Like dogs.
Wild dogs. And I don't see a lot of difference between them and him.
No, you wouldn't.
The screen shifted to a jerky image of the sewer pipe's interior. Dark lighting and old incandescent bulbs were spaced far apart along the steeply curved walls, which slid past as the camera moved.
Both operatives have cameras mounted on their uniforms. That's Operative 6's camera. Agent, punch up the dossier on him.
A still image appeared in the corner of the screen. a fearsome figure in spandex and metal mesh, with a flaming pumpkin head and a terrible grin. Lettering beneath the image read, Subject, Stephen Mark Levins. Aliases, Jack-O-Lantern. Group affiliation, none. Powers, body armor, 360-degree vision, wrist blasters, assorted grenades. Power type, artificial. Current location, New York, New York. On the main video, the sewer pipe opened up onto a long straight tunnel.
Operative 6?
I hear you, Sexy. I think we got it.
Roger, Thunderbolt. You are clear to engage.
Tony tensed and leaned forward, staring at the screen. The camera lurched to the right, and a second figure swung into view. A lanky man in purple boots and a pointed hood with blue mask and sharp-pointed teeth. Operative 4. Hill gestured to the agent, and another profile appeared in the corner of the screen. Subject, Jody Putt. Aliases, The Jester. Group affiliation, none. Powers, assorted toy and joke gimmicks, potentially lethal. Power type, artificial. Current location, New York, New York. Jester turned toward the camera and grinned.
I got this one.
He reached into a satchel and pulled out a small plastic doll with a comically angry expression on its face. He wound its crank and set it down. The toy took off down the tunnel, skimming across the sewer water.
Switch over to Jester's camera.
The image shifted to a view of Jack-O-Lantern, crouched and dangerous atop a flying disc, hovering just above the water. He reached out and grabbed Jester, pulling him aboard the disc, and together they sped off down the tunnel after the wind-up toy. The figure of Spider-Man zoomed into view, frantically splashing away from them through the murky water. His suit was torn, the tentacles hung useless now. Part of his face showed through the torn remains of his mask. The toy whizzed into view, heading straight towards Spider-Man. He turned, startled.
What the?
A huge fireball filled the screen.
You said he wouldn't be killed!
You think that could kill him? Please. Back to Operative 6 camera.
On screen, the dust slowly cleared. Spider-Man sat crouching in filthy water now. Above him was the tall figure of the Jester.
Well, if it isn't little Peter Spider-Man. Well, how does it feel to be on the wrong side of the law, Parker? You like seeing the Jester wear a sheriff's badge?
Jack-O-Lantern circled Spider-Man from above.
You ought to see who we're hanging with now, Petey. Bullseye, Venom, Lady Deathstrike. Me and Jester are finally on the villain's A-list.
And it's legit, too?
Spider-Man shook his head, struggling to focus on the circling villains.
Oh, baby.
Jester pulled out a yo-yo.
This is just too awesome for words.
He hurled it at Spider-Man's chest. Spider-Man fell backwards down into the water. Jack-O-Lantern grabbed him and slammed him against the tunnel wall.
You know, this gig seemed like a bum deal at first, working for S.H.I.E.L.D. But then word from the top says kick the crap out of Spider-Man!
We're only obeying orders!
Spider-Man's head lolled to the side, unmoving.
He's down, Thunderbolt. Drop him and wait for cleanup crew.
Oh, S.H.I.E.L.D.!
Lay one more finger on that guy, Jack, and I shoot 5,000 volts through your system. You know I'm not bluffing.
Jack-O-Lantern dropped Spider-Man.
S.H.I.E.L.D. support is on their way. Just cuff him and sit tight.
You're no fool.
Jack-O-Lantern's head blew apart.
What the hell?
On the monitor screen, Jester's camera swung around wildly, searching the tunnel walls.
S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D., do you read? There's somebody else down here.
The camera lurched, tottered, and tipped upward to show the roof of the tunnel. The view twitched again, then stopped moving.
He's down too. Jack's camera is not transmitting. Still got Jester's.
On the screen, a heavy black boot loomed into view.
Get me a visual! Any visual!
I can't.
Damn it! What the hell just happened down there?
Transmission's cut off, Director. We're deaf and blind.
Damn it.
All S.H.I.E.L.D. units in vicinity of 4th Street and Broadway, proceed immediately underground to sewer pipes at coordinates on feed 24J. Patrol all streets within a 5-block radius. Report anyone or anything trying to surface through manhole or other egress point. We may have a resistance operation in progress, or...
Acting Director Hill.
Tony moved to block her way. She frowned at him, but held her ground.
I'm not impressed by your methods. You failed to capture your quarry, and you lost two agents from your pilot program on their very first assignment.
Big loss.
Nonetheless, I asked you to handle this my way, and you refused.
You can barely walk. And this problem is largely of your making. No one told you to invite Spider-Man, a notorious loner with anti-authoritarian tendencies, into your inner circle.
Get off my property.
Fine.
She gestured to the SHIELD agents.
Let's move out!
They began holstering weapons, stowing away equipment, zipping up carry packs.
Snap it up, boys. We got a spider to catch.
You won't catch him.
Wishful thinking, Stark. We'll catch him.
Tony stood alone for a long time. He tested his knee, tried putting weight on it. It stung, but he could walk. That was enough. It took him 3 tries to find a cell phone that worked.
Pepper, I need a cleanup crew.
He looked around at the wreckage.
And see if you can get the president on the line, will you?
A smell of fresh ink rose up from the brand new driver's license. Captain America handed it to Sue Richards.
Barbara Landau, Ryan Landau.
Johnny Storm looked up from his license.
We're supposed to be married?
They'd gathered around a paper-strewn conference table. Fluorescent lights glared down, painting the group in unflattering washed-out hues.
We're running low on cover identities. With Daredevil incarcerated, our source is dried up.
Married? That's got to be the creepiest thing we've ever done.
How do you think I feel, sis? You look like my last date's grandmother. Ow!
Moving to the new headquarters had been difficult. Transporting the monitoring and medical equipment across town, it seemed impossible until Sue showed up. Her invisibility powers had saved them from detection several times. But Cap knew the resistance was still on shaky ground. He couldn't forget Hawkeye's parting warning about a traitor in the group, and his own injuries were slowing him down. His left arm still hung in a sling. It stabbed with pain every time he stood up. Tigra walked in, frowning.
Still no cover ID for me.
We've gone over this, Tigra.
He indicated her bikini-clad body, covered head to toe with striped orange fur.
You're not exactly inconspicuous.
Yeah, must be tough looking as hot as you.
Tigra rubbed her back up against Johnny's shoulder.
Oh, please.
Sorry, Mrs. Landau.
I used to pass for normal all the time. All it took was an image inducer.
Which is Stark Enterprises technology. We can't have any of that here. Tony's probably got everything they've made in the past 10 years tagged with location tracers. As for you two, the important thing is these cover identities get you out in public again, which lets you help people. That's what we're here for, right?
Oh, he's always so righteous. Takes all the fun out of arguing with him.
Say it loud, Cap. You like the new crib?
It'll do, Luke. Spartan, but that's a plus. What was this place again?
African-American Employment Specialist, Inc. Helping the hard-working black man compete in a white man's world. Fell victim to the economy. It's been empty more than a year.
No love for the hard-working black man.
Mm-hmm.
One by one, they filed in and took seats around the big table. Cage, Falcon, Tigra, Dagger, Photon, the newly arrived Stingray in bright red and white, Sue and Johnny, Patriot and Speed. The Resistance.
Okay, let's get to it.
Cap scanned a handwritten agenda.
Anyone been captured lately?
Nighthawk and Valkyrie, busted in Queens.
Photon was a relative newcomer, a young African-American woman with light-based powers.
Which cuts our aerial team down to Falcon and yours truly.
Stingray spread his wings.
And me.
Gliding ain't flying, son. No worries, Cap. We got it covered.
Damn SHIELD units.
Cap clenched his wounded hand into a fist and felt the pain stab through his arm.
For every man we've gained these past few days, we've lost one, too.
And they're all in that prison.
Maybe we can do something about that. Does anyone know the status of their prison transfer plans?
Well, Tony and Reed are setting up negative zone portals at major prisons around the country, including Rikers, but none of them are operational yet. So far, everyone's still being shunted through the Baxter building.
The Baxter building. Susan, can you get us in there?
Normally, yes, but I'm sure Reed will have changed the security codes. I might even be a liability. The computers would detect my presence immediately.
Just as well. I've got another urgent mission for you. What about...
Don't look at me, Cap. If Susie can't get in, I don't stand a chance. Reed's been making notes on how to nullify my powers since, since before I had powers.
Damn it! There's a window of opportunity here. If we can take down the portal in the Baxter building, that'll leave them without anywhere to send our guys. In a week, that won't be a problem for them. We've got to strike soon.
Cut the cord and the whole thing unravels.
If we're lucky.
What we need is to get some guys back. Make this a fair fight again.
What do they call that place? Number 42?
Nobody knows why.
Knowing Tony Stark, it probably has something to do with his dad.
They all heard it at once. All 11 Resistance members shot to their feet, turned toward the doorway, and saw the Punisher, lit stark black and white by the glaring lights, dripping wet with filthy water. In his hands, he held the limp, bloody form of Spider-Man.
Give me a medic. Now!
The infirmary had been hastily adapted from an open office area. Cots and diagnostic machines crammed in where cubicles had stood before. Two medics lifted Spider-Man onto a bed, casting wary glances at the Punisher.
Doesn't weigh much.
Try carrying him 3 miles.
Cap and the others stood back, leaving a wide area free for the medics to work. But Cap's eyes never strayed from the Punisher.
What happened?
Multiple fractures and serious blood loss.
I mean...
Tony Stark and his buddies. I think there was some kind of hallucinogen in the bombs they attacked him with, too.
And you rescued him. What happened to his attackers?
Punisher shrugged.
This costume is fused to his skin in places.
Remove every inch and burn it. It's Stark issue. They could be tracking him right now.
You know, this might all be a setup.
You think I'm working with Tony Stark?
Speed shook his head.
I don't understand any of this. You all saw the press conference. Spider-Man is so far up Iron Man's butt you can't see his feet anymore.
Maybe he was, kid. But he's on our side now.
Our side?
Falc?
No, Cap. Give me a minute.
Falcon pushed past Captain America, pointing a finger at the skull emblem on Punisher's chest.
You're a wanted murderer, Punisher. You cap more men than most of the guys we fight. Since when are you on our side?
Since the other side started enlisting supervillains.
Am I the only one seeing the irony here?
The way I see it, you people need all the help you can get.
Great. Why don't we call up Hannibal Lecter and see if he's available too?
Because Hannibal Lecter doesn't have the Black Ops training to get you into the Baxter building.
You can do that?
I got in here.
What?
Please tell me this group isn't so far gone that we're signing up the Punisher.
Your call, boss. Do we hand Skull Man over to the cops, or do we hear him out?
Cap turned away, frowning. He'd run up against the Punisher once before. It had been one of the toughest fights of his life. Punisher could be a formidable ally for either side. On the table, Spider-Man lay, fighting for his life. Whichever way Cap chose, whichever path he took, something terrible was going to happen. He could sense it, deep in his war-hardened bones. And they were all depending on him to lead them, to build this tattered resistance into a permanent force for good. Step by step, brick by brick.
All right, Castle. Talk.
Take a breath of that air, Hank. A lot healthier than New York, am I right?
Initiative Training Camp 09AZ in Arizona bustled with activity under the bright southwestern sun. Newly registered recruits in brightly colored training uniforms flew and ran and sparred and lifted Sherman tanks for practice all across the sprawling yard.
All right, people! Move!
Shield officers and men with clipboards followed them like mother hens, nodding, frowning, and jotting down notes on each recruit's performance. Fully half the yard was cordoned off for new construction. Shield troops mingled with government workers in backhoes and steam shovels. Construction crews had been laboring around the clock, converting the former Marine base into a facility resilient enough to house superhumans. Like everything else in the registration plan, the camp was coming together on the fly, and very, very fast. Hank Pym turned to Tony.
I'm just not sure, Tony. I'm a bio-researcher, not a drill sergeant.
You don't have to be the guy in the yard with the megaphone, Hank. I just want you running things.
A blurry figure whizzed by, too fast to be seen clearly.
Who's that?
Tony consulted his tablet computer.
That's, Hermes.
What kind of speed is he hitting?
Mach 1, if he hasn't eaten. But we'll have him at Mach 3 by the time we go public. Hey, I keep forgetting to ask, how's Jen?
We're not really, talking right now.
Tony thought Hank looked sad, lost. He needed this, and Tony needed him. Tony felt impatient, hot, and out of place in his Armani suit. He hated taking the armor off these days. It made him feel like a fish stranded on land, in his case, flailing around for data. But the main Iron Man suit still needed a couple of hours of repair, time Tony just hadn't been able to find. Besides, he'd wanted to appeal to Hank as a man, as an old friend. Iron Man was becoming too much of a public authority figure.
Excuse me, guys.
A burly construction foreman gestured to a huge crane lumbering toward them. A massive one-piece building frame swung from its main cable.
Need to get this down on the foundation.
Tony and Hank hurried out of the way.
Holographic combat simulator building. When it's operational, it'll let you train the recruits in hundreds of different simulated environments.
You don't give up, do you?
There's no time to give up, Hank. We're setting up the champions in California, those new Mormon heroes in Utah, and I've assigned the Space Knights to Chicago.
I heard Forceworks is going to Iowa?
Pending background checks and the local authorities giving their absolute approval, the public needs super people they can count on, Hank. We're doing this right or not at all.
Uh-huh. How's Reed doing?
I have no intention of getting between him and Sue. He did insist on immunity for her and Johnny as a condition for his continued assistance. That took some talking with the president, let me tell you. Enough of this. Come on, there's somebody you should talk to.
He led Hank over to the recruits. Stature, formerly of the Young Avengers, stood with a green-skinned girl sporting a spiked mohawk and a brawny, cocky-looking blonde guy. Tony checked their IDs on his tablet. They were Komodo and Hardball.
Hank, I think you've met Cassie Lang.
Of course. But the last time I saw you, you were...
He held his hand 3 feet off the ground. Stature smiled and used her powers to rise up to 8 feet in height.
Not anymore.
Dr. Pym invented the size-changing serum you use, Cassie. I think you could learn a lot from him.
That's why I'm here, to learn.
See, Hank? Cassie's late father was the second Ant-Man, and now she's the heir to your serum. In a way, they're like your children.
You forgot one of my children, Tony. Bill Foster.
Stature shrank down to normal size, a troubled expression on her face.
Tony, can you just offer me this position? What about S.H.I.E.L.D.? Has Director Hill signed off on it?
Don't worry about Hill, Hank. She didn't exactly distinguish herself with the Thunderbolts beta test.
Komodo stepped forward.
Is it true Spider-Man got away?
Temporarily.
What are you going to do, Mr. Stark, when you find Cap and the others?
Finding them isn't the problem, Cassie. The point is to make them see reason. That's what S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't understand.
A nervous, dark-haired girl approached the recruits.
Guys, they want us to do drills in 10 minutes. I don't know if I'm ready.
Be cool, Armory. It'll be fine.
Armory held up her left arm. Alien weaponry covered it, flashing with energy.
I don't know if I can control my power.
No, stop!
A coach with a clipboard approached, pointing behind Tony.
I said stop!
Something slammed into the group, scattering them. Tony climbed to his feet.
Hermes again.
Armory had been flung 10 feet away. Her weapon arm was pointed upward, and fiery alien energy flared out of it. The bolt arced over the yard past a construction site, straight into the main administration building, punching a hole through the wall. The yard erupted in panic. Recruits scattered, running for cover. S.H.I.E.L.D. agents scrambled for their armor, dodging Armory's wild, uncontrolled assault.
Armory!
Tony crawled over to Hank Pym, who lay sprawled in the sand. Stature was just picking herself up.
I don't have my gear with me. You have to sign.
I'm not a superhero anymore, Tony.
No, but she is.
Me? Violet? Armory? She's got this bad panic reflex.
Cassie, over here.
Hank ushered her back behind a truck. Tony followed them, watching carefully.
I need you to grow very large. 30 feet or so.
But my dad said never to grow that big. He said my spine would snap. Square cube something.
The serum has a calcium booster. Your bones can handle the strain for a few minutes. Not for long, but it's our only hope right now.
She leaned around the edge of the truck. Tony looked too. Armory was barely visible, lost in a haze of swirling sand and alien energy. One of her random force bolts struck a Jeep.
Okay.
Stature shot up. Hank pointed.
Over there, the new building.
Stature turned to look at the combat simulator building. It sat newly installed on its foundation, mortar still wet around the base. The construction workers had fled from the site, huddling behind jeeps and steam shovels. Keeping one eye on Armory, Stature crossed the yard. She reached down and grabbed hold of the entire combat simulator building, struggling to lift it.
Use your knees!
The building came loose of its foundation. Stetcher lifted it to waist level and tottered, nearly falling backward under the weight. She shifted her burden, then she turned toward Armory. The recruits had all run away now. Shield agents held their positions. Armory spotted Stetcher looming above her. Her eyes glowed, her alien arm flashing wildly.
Violet? It's okay. It's me, Cassie.
Armory's eyes focused. The energy receded just slightly, retreating to an area 8 feet around her body. Stetcher saw her chance. Slowly, gently, she began to deposit the heavy building around Armory. Armory looked up and around, but didn't move. When Stetcher was done, the structure enclosed Armory completely, hiding her from view.
It's okay. You're safe now.
Stetcher stepped back, eyeing the building nervously. Tony watched, expecting to see force bolts shatter its walls from inside, but nothing happened. Tony led Hank out from behind the truck. All around in the yard, little fires burned. Recruits crept sheepishly out of their hiding places. Shield agents reached for fire extinguishers. Closing her eyes, Stature shrank back down to normal size. She walked up to the simulator building, now deposited awkwardly at an angle in the middle of the yard. Armory peeked out, her power arm dormant now.
I am so sorry.
Together, Stature, Komodo, and Hardball helped Armory over to the main administration building. Hank frowned at Tony.
You still think this is a good idea?
Are you kidding? This incident proves it. We just had a potentially deadly superpower outbreak, which was diffused quickly with zero casualties. Imagine if that girl were untrained and her panic attack had occurred within a city.
Sorry, Mr. Stark. You can't exactly control a Greek god.
Where is Hermes now?
Probably halfway to Flagstaff.
Hadn't you better find him before he gets all the way there?
Mr. Stark?
Take a shield regiment if you need one.
Right.
Now do you see why I need you here? Normal humans can run drills, keep records, evaluate performance charts, but I need someone with real powers experience running this place.
Thank you, Tony.
I should be thanking you. It's all coming together, Hank. We should have done this years ago. Soon the world will be a better, safer place.
Passing level 23. Captain, I once broke into Rikers Island to take out a mob boss, but I've never seen security protocols like this.
Cap frowned, conscious of Cage, Falcon, and Tigra standing just behind him. They'd crowded into his new comm room, which had been outfitted with equipment from a decommissioned nuclear sub. Cap had called in a favor with a Navy contact, who'd delivered the drab gray fixtures, old-style push-button consoles, and a bright red landline phone with a long spiral cord. The younger Resistance members had remodeled the framework, ripping out sonar displays and replacing them with brand new flat screens showing mission status, intelligence on the initiative camps, and hacked hero dossiers from Tony Stark's files. An array of hard drives and a pair of laptops linked the whole system together. Cap felt oddly at home here.
Punisher, describe what you see.
Well, I'm climbing up the maintenance shaft through a constant stream of blue, semi-transparent, balloon-like objects. They're just floating in the air like bubbles in a stream.
Those are artificial antigens. Sue Richard said Reed based the Baxter Building security on the human immune system this month.
Don't even brush against any of those things. You do, and the whole system will attack you as an invading organism.
Relax, Captain. Nothing can read me while I'm wearing the dampers. I'm invisible to all cameras, trip beams, and overgrown T-cells.
Where the hell you lay your hands on that kind of hardware, Castle?
Let's just say Tony Stark's warehouse manager should invest in better locks. And don't worry, I swept everything for tracking devices.
Tigra's furry arm rested lightly on Cap's shoulder. Suddenly, he was very aware of her presence, her warmth, her curves, her wide cat eyes.
Passing level 28 now.
Keep me posted, soldier.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Punisher's a walking arsenal, Cap. Is Sue worried about him being in that building with her kids?
Reed sent the children away for a while, thankfully.
Cap swiveled in his chair, turning to the others.
So where do we stand?
Falcon pointed to a screen showing a news report.
Johnny Storm's team just foiled an invasion of Philadelphia by the Mole Man. Went off textbook perfect. They roped off the area, protecting the citizens. Then they met up unexpectedly with Doctor Strange, made a contact. I'm gonna follow that up right after this.
Cap zoomed in the screen, focusing on a red-caped man with a dark blue tunic, Fu Manchu mustache, and a high, majestic collar.
Strange is a powerful mystic. I think even Tony's afraid of him.
He's also pretty reserved. No commitments yet. But with his help, our team got the job done fast. Knocked Molly back down to the lower level of Dirtville, and got the hell out of there before S.H.I.E.L.D. arrived.
Doesn't seem to have helped our poll numbers.
This isn't about polls, Greer. And it's not about one incident. We have to show the people we're doing the right thing every day.
Cap looked into Tigra's lovely green eyes. She smiled. Cap turned away, suddenly uncomfortable.
How's, Spider-Man doing?
Still groggy, but recovering fast. Dude's got an amazing constitution.
Don't push him, but I need to talk to him as soon as he's up and around. He's the only person who's been to that secret prison and come back on his own 2 feet. Speaking of which, what's the status of those negative zone gateways?
Falcon typed in a sequence, and a United States map appeared on one of the screens. Red lights blinked over Chicago, Sacramento, Albuquerque, and just off the shore of New York City.
These portals are scheduled to go live over the next 8 days.
He pointed to the offshore icon.
The Rikers Island one will be activated first, day after tomorrow.
At that point, they'll start moving all East Coast prisoners through there. They'll stop using the Baxter building for transport. Our window of attack is closing fast.
You know, we could use some backup. Is that where you sent Sue Richards?
Yes.
She looked at him, questions in her eyes. But Cap said nothing else.
The initiative camps are springing up fast, too. Stark's latest press release says 49 young heroes have signed up for training.
Camps or jail?
Cap felt it again, the dark hardness growing inside him.
Japanese Americans were offered that choice once. The Jews of Germany got both, wrapped up in one sadistic package.
Cage and Falcon exchanged troubled looks.
Cap, nobody likes being locked up less than this ex-con right here, but you gotta admit there's a difference between training camps and internment camps.
Or concentration camps.
There's also a difference between living free and being told what to do by an oppressive government. A government that maintains its power by scaring the hell out of its own people. Stark Enterprises has spent the past decade building a security state for the people of this country to live in. Did you really think they weren't going to use it?
Ahoy, Captain. I'm in their data center.
Good. Now I need everything you can find on this big number 42 complex, with special emphasis on the negative zone portal leading to it. Size, how much space there is to move around, how far the prison itself is from the portal entrance, what kind of guards it has, how the security works. Think you can handle that without shooting somebody in the head?
Maybe. If nobody interrupts me, be in touch soon.
I'll check on Spidey.
And I better look into this Doctor Strange thing. Cap, you and me been through a lot. The Red Skull, the Kree invasion, the Secret Empire.
Spit it out, Sam.
I hope you know what you're doing.
Cap watched him go, then turned to stare at the U.S. map for a long moment. He suddenly felt very tired. Then Tigra's strong, soft hands were massaging his shoulders.
Alone at last.
Greer.
You're incredibly tense, you know that? Leads to bad decisions.
He turned to face her. Her lovely, sharp face was covered with soft, beautifully patterned fur. Wet lips glistened below a tiny, cat-like nose. Greer Nelson had once been an ordinary human woman until a mystic ritual transformed her. Her strength and agility were now much greater than a human's, and so were her passions. Cap had known men and women who hooked up casually, almost mindlessly, in wartime situations. Correspondents, civilian contractors, sometimes even soldiers. He had never allowed himself the indulgence.
I heard from Hawkeye yesterday.
What?
He's doing well. They're giving him a whole initiative team to run. He wanted me to tell you. Cap.
Yes?
What's the end game here?
The prison.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, ultimately, what are we trying to accomplish? Registration is the law. No matter what happens, they're just going to hunt us forever, right?
Laws can be overturned. if we can achieve a critical mass of superhumans working with us, solving problems and helping people all over the world, we can win out over the forces of fear. I believe that. I have to believe that.
Yeah.
A strange look crossed her face.
I guess you do.
He leaned into her, drawn by her scent. She hesitated, then moved to meet his lips.
Jackpot, mon capitaine.
What have you got, Punisher?
Specs, schematics, all kinds of plans. I'm transmitting them now.
Good. Thank you.
I don't think you're gonna like it. That place has more protection than any incarceration facility I've ever seen. It's gonna take a lot more than your team of grunts to get in there.
A data signal flashed in front of Cap. The label Project 42 appeared on one of the large screens. In rapid sequence, blueprints began to flash up, all watermarked with the Fantastic Four's distinctive Four logo. Cap glanced over at Tigra. She smiled back at him, a wistful, playful smile. The moment was gone. The spell was broken.
I'll tell the others.
Receiving, Castle. Just keep it coming.
Three miles out, Sue started to hear something. She checked the instrument panel, wondering how a radio transmission could have reached her here, 5 miles beneath the ocean's surface. The board was clear. No transmission showed on its log. Yet she still heard it. She peered forward, gazing through the cockpit of the mini-sub, struggling to see through the gloom. But this far down, all was darkness. Eerie, mutated fish flickered in and out of view, bony carapaces briefly illuminated by the sub's forward lights. Then she remembered. The Atlanteans were telepathic. She wasn't actually hearing anything. Her mind could sense their thoughts, coming from somewhere in the darkness ahead. That in itself was alarming. The Atlanteans remained a mysterious people, but nothing the Fantastic Four had ever seen indicated they could mentally transmit messages at such a distance. Sue had been to Atlantis twice before, and both times the approach had been silent, uneventful. Maybe something was wrong in Atlantis. If so, that would make it doubly hard to ask him for help.
At least I'm close.
A glow appeared directly ahead, like a giant stone jellyfish squatting on the ocean floor. Slowly, Atlantis loomed into view. A sunken city surrounded by void, its ancient towers chipped and battered, but proud nonetheless. The city glowed from within, illuminated by unknown sorcery combined with science beyond that of the surface world. A stone wall circled the base of the city, pocked with battle scars from long ago. As Sue approached, a pair of Atlantean warriors appeared out of the gloom. They wore sparse military uniforms that left their powerful chests bare and helmets with large fins on them. The lead warrior brandished a long spear. The second one held a compact, glowing energy weapon. Sue reached into her pack, then held up a stone amulet to the inside of the cockpit window. On the amulet was carved the personal seal of Prince Namor, sovereign ruler of Atlantis. The lead warrior peered at the amulet, nodded, and gestured sharply to his fellow. They lowered their weapons and waved Sue on. She arced the sub up and forward, swooping over the seawall. She still couldn't see many Atlanteans. Last time she'd been here, a phalanx of six warriors had received her. Today the wall seemed to be guarded by a skeleton force, and even fewer citizens milled around inside. Just inside the seawall, she parked the sub and secured its controls. In moments, she had donned a bubble helmet and air supply, checked that her suit was watertight, and picked up a small carry pack. Once outside the sub, she started toward the center of the city. Somehow she knew that was where the Mind Song would be strongest. She passed a variety of architectural styles, Doric columns, Dravidian pyramids, Byzantine domes, all slightly different from their surface counterparts, adapted to the needs of an underwater culture. Doorways appeared at all levels, even out of penthouse apartments. Balconies opened straight onto the sea without railings. A civilization of swimmers wasn't confined to the ground, and they had no fear of falling either. She still saw very few citizens. When she reached the Avenue of Poseidon, she saw why. Thousands of people, the majority of the city, crowded into the central square, floating and hovering at all levels. Herders, builders, merchants, farmers, judicators, and many, many warriors, their finned helmets polished to a fine sheen. Skin shades ranged from deep blue to sea green to a pale, faded yellow. There were racial divides here, Sue knew. Ancient tensions she couldn't even begin to understand. Carefully, deferentially, she made her way through the crowd. Several of the Atlanteans stopped to stare. A pink-skinned woman in an air helmet was unheard of in Atlantis, and not terribly welcome either. When she reached the front of the crowd, she saw him. And all her old doubts rose to the surface again, along with a nagging sense of regret. Prince Namor floated in the center of the square, addressing the crowd. His muscular frame was cast, as always, in a pose of kingly arrogance. His pointed ears, sharp cheekbones, even the small wings on his feet, absolutely nothing about him had changed since Sue's last visit. He had donned his dress uniform, she saw, a dark blue tunic worn open to display his magnificent chest. Namor's skin color was Caucasian, the legacy of his human father. But despite his mixed blood, the Atlanteans acknowledged him as their absolute ruler. Just behind him, a transparent glass coffin floated, glowing faintly with logomantic energy. The coffin was empty. Namor had taught Sue the basics of Atlantean, and the telepathic component of their language allowed her to understand him.
Imperius Rex. 29 days. A full turn of the tides it has been, since the violent death of my cousin at the hands of the hated surface people. And so we gather today, the proud inheritors of ancient Atlantis, to enact the age-old ritual.
Namorita.
One of the new warriors had been directly related to Namor, a member of the royal family.
The time has come for the Regresus. The return of my cousin to the sea. As we all sprang from the leaves and crawling things of the ocean floor, so now shall she be returned to the source of all life. Or rather, she would be.
Namor gestured to the coffin, floating hollow behind him.
Behold my cousin's remains. There are none. The surface men have not merely robbed us of the royal princess. The laughing light in my life and the lives of all Atlanteans. They have deprived us of every last bit of what she was. They fill our waters with poison. They boil the ice caps and hunt proud species to extinction. And when one of us, sweetest and noblest of all our race, ventures forth to live among them, this is their response. We seek nothing from them, nothing but coexistence. And yet their hatreds, their petty feuds, infest our refuge thousands of miles away. The superhumans of the North American continent boast of their power, their honor, their prowess at combat and destruction. Yet even as I speak, they battle amongst themselves over an incomprehensible matter of names and papers. Hear me, my subjects. It is my fondest hope that they will exterminate themselves and leave this world to us.
Before Sue could react, a warrior's rough hands grabbed her by the arm and thrust her forward. She tumbled in the water, pulled off balance by her pack.
My liege, start with this one.
She flashed on her force field, knocking the warrior back. But the recoil sent her tumbling through the water. She wasn't used to fighting at this depth. Her force field seemed unusually thick, hard to control. She flailed straight into Namor, her force field still up.
Well, well, well. Susan Storm.
Conflicting emotions flashed across Namor's dark, cruel eyes. Then, he reached out a hand to her. She lowered her force field and allowed him to take her arm. He pulled her roughly toward the center of the square. The coffin floated just above, held in place, she saw now, by tiny water jets attached to its base. Namor took her by the shoulders, turned her roughly to face the crowd.
This woman is one of the world-famous Fantastic Four. She represents the surface world superhuman community. Tell my people, Susan. Defend to them the actions of your comrades, of the so-called heroes of your realm.
He gestured at the coffin.
Explain how this atrocity came to be.
Namorita was killed by a supervillain, not a hero.
A villain? Like myself.
Sue reached into her pack and pulled out a small, watertight cylinder made of sculpted marble.
This urn contains your cousin's ashes. At least all we could find. I'm afraid it wasn't very much.
1,000 eyes watched as Namor accepted the urn, running his hands over its surface.
Namor, I'm very sorry about...
Busty.
An old man swam forward. Namor grasped his neck in an intimate gesture, communicating urgently with him.
Come with me.
Watch the damn hands.
But Sue allowed herself to be led. Behind them, she heard the old man addressing the crowd.
The ceremony will resume tomorrow. Warriors, return to your assigned posts.
Namor had brought Sue to his royal bedchamber. The room was watertight, pressurized, and Namor could have it filled with breathable air in minutes, an accommodation he granted Sue now so she could remove her helmet. A huge round bed filled most of the room.
Why are you here, Susan?
She gestured at the urn, discarded on the bed.
Don't mislead me again.
Things are bad, Namor. They've issued what amounts to a superhuman draft, and they're imprisoning people who don't comply. They've already killed one of us.
Yes, yes.
Captain America's raid is planned for tomorrow night. You've got one of the fiercest warrior armies in the world out there, Namor. Having you on our side could mean the difference between winning and losing.
You heard my people. You felt their grief, their rage. I am their king. Their pain, their outrage is mine as well. Why in the Seven Seas would I want to help you?
Captain America is one of your oldest friends. You fought with him in World War II. You've known him longer than anyone.
And where is my friend now? Off plotting his little power struggles, no doubt. While he sends you here to take advantage of our unique relationship.
We don't have a relationship.
Namor eyed her closely, and a sly smile crept onto his lips. He sat on the edge of the bed.
Very well. I will help you, Susan Storm.
It's Richards now.
He pulled back the top sheet of the bed.
I prefer the Storm.
Namor barely flinched, but his eyes turned cold.
You're an arrogant, entitled child who thinks anyone and anything is there for the taking. Always have been.
You once liked that.
I'm not finished. You don't respect women. You don't respect yourself. And yet, despite all that, I always thought you had your own brand of honor somewhere deep inside. Something that made your people want to follow you anywhere. But I was wrong. This is your price? You'll help us save your friends and allies from imprisonment, subjugation, and death if and only if I agree to sleep with you?
I grow bored now.
Tough! That's just tough, because you want to know something. This is important to me. I have left my husband and my children, which is the hardest thing I've ever done. I miss them so much, miss them every second of every day. I see them everywhere, but it's not them, it's just me, it's just in my mind. And I didn't do all that. I didn't tear my life apart so I could come down here and submit to the whims of some puffed up, greasy fish man. I did it because it was right.
He turned away from her, his face angry, downcast. Even if he wanted to help, there was no way his pride would allow it now. Sue's adrenaline ebbed. She felt ashamed, a failure. She wanted to cry. But despite everything, She wanted the slate clean between them. She needed to be honest with him.
The ashes. We don't know for sure their name or Rita's. The site was atomized pretty bad. The authorities did their best. But really, Namor, her ashes, speedballs, night thrashers, or microbes. Does it really matter?
We are finished here. Go.
He pointed to the door, his arm rigid, his eyes burning in cold anger. So she put her helmet on and left. In her pressurized deep sea suit, she swam away from the waters of Atlantis, past the swarms of men and women going about their daily business, pausing as she passed to stare with hostile eyes. So small, so provincial, so filled with tiny hatreds, just like surface people. No, there was one difference. When Namor's people cried, the tears just washed off into the sea.
Okay, got it.
So Namor's a no-show?
Sorry, Cap.
In the Pacific Theater, he'd once seen Namor storm an entire Japanese base with only one man, Cap himself, for backup. Back then, Namor would never have let him down.
Moving on. Who else have we got?
Cap tried not to favor his bad leg as he led the group down the hallway. Falcon consulted his tablet.
Wolverine won't break ranks with the X-Men, so that's out. And S.H.I.E.L.D. just picked up Hercules outside Chicago. That's a throwdown I would have liked to see.
Too bad. Tony's already got a Greek god on his side. We could have used one, too.
Black Panther's with us, though. He's raging mad about the Bill Foster business. He and Storm say they've got our backs.
Isn't Storm a mutant?
She's also Queen of Wakanda now. Guess that trumps the X-Men's neutrality.
What about Doctor Strange?
Yeah, said he had to meditate on the situation. Last I talked to him, he was entering the 8-day trance of the Fall Team. I wouldn't count on it for tonight.
It's the first phase of the assault that worries me.
I know. We need as many troops as we can get. I've called in all the reserves, Cap.
Cap stepped through the door to the conference room. An array of bright costumes sat around the table. Cage, Dagger, Patriot, Speed, Photon, Stingray, and at least a half dozen newcomers. Cap recognized ex-villainesses Asp and Diamondback, among others. Punisher sat alone at one corner of the table, meticulously cleaning a pair of semi-automatic rifles with a can of oil.
Okay, let's get down to business.
Newly installed holographic projectors came to life, and a rotating schematic image rose up from the table. It showed a jagged complex of buildings jutting out of a rock, floating in a surreal version of outer space.
The Punisher got us all the specs on the Negative Zone prison. This is a huge collective holding facility designed and built by Stark Enterprises specifically to hold superhumans. The layout can be found in this three-dimensional schematic.
Cap reached out to the hologram with both hands and pinched it apart. The image zoomed in, cutting inside the buildings to reveal corridors, cells, exercise areas, and medical facilities, all carefully labeled. Everyone leaned forward, studying the display. Photon frowned.
It's full of supervillains, right?
Ostensibly, it's for high-risk supervillains. But a lot of rebel superheroes are being held there, too. A lot of our friends.
Stark, Reed Richards, and Henry Pym are planning to install puppet heroes in every state. Eventually, there'll be 50 portals leading directly into the prison. Right now...
A new image rose, the soaring spire of the Baxter Building.
There's only one.
But we need to move fast. Our intel suggests they're planning a huge assault on the rebel superhuman community, using both S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Thunderbolts. So tonight is our absolute last opportunity.
He looked around the room. Some looked uneasy. Particularly the younger heroes, Patriot, Dagger, Speed.
Look, I understand this is difficult. You're all used to battle, to overwhelming odds, even to hiding from the authorities. What you're not used to is having to go up against other heroes. People whose priorities in other times and places would be exactly the same as your own. Friends, and former friends. But you have to be ready. You have to harden yourselves to be prepared for what's coming tonight, because if Iron Man or Miss Marvel comes charging through the air toward you, you need to act swiftly and decisively to put them down. Otherwise, you'll be the next guest in their little alien lockup. And worse than that, you'll be letting down everyone else in this room.
Tigra entered the room.
Sounds like we could use some help.
She gestured theatrically, and in came Spider-Man. He wore his original costume, red and blue with an intricate webbing pattern.
Hi, guys.
Johnny Storm grinned broadly and shot to his feet. He crossed to Spider-Man and gave him a big, broad man hug.
Don't scare me like that again, you wall-crawling freak.
You took a few lumps yourself, Matchstick. He's off the ribs, okay? I'm still a little creaky.
Oh, Mr. Sensitive, always playing to the ladies.
All right, all right. Spider-Man, are you sure you're up to this?
Absolutely, Cap. Sounds like you're gonna need every extra pair of hands.
Spider-Man took a seat near the door and a vacant chair next to the Punisher. Punisher squeezed some lubricant into his rifle's firing chamber.
You carry those everywhere?
You're welcome. You know, for saving your life.
Cap pointed at the Baxter Building, zooming the display in to the upper floors.
The key spots are here and here. Reed's main lab and this server room. It's labeled the Quincunx.
I've never seen that room before.
We should be able to get inside, but it's possible there will be defenses we don't anticipate.
Cage clapped a hand on Spider-Man's shoulder.
Not to worry. We got some serious power here.
Still, even with Spider-Man, I'm a little worried about the numbers.
Diamondback, a reformed criminal in sleek black and purple, rose to her feet.
I might be able to help there.
She gestured to the far doorway.
Goldbug? Plunderer?
Two men walked in. Goldbug wore a full-body costume in red and gold, with a metallic headpiece that resembled an insect's mandible. Plunderer's garb was old school, blue and white spandex with a high collar and half-face mask. They were both wanted criminals, not reformed ones like Diamondback and Asp.
You guys ain't the only ones scared we're heading for a police state, Captain. The super criminal community is more concerned about Stark's plans than anybody.
Yeah, we just came by to let you know we're here if you need us. Only fair if Iron Man's got supervillains on his side, am I right?
The Punisher stood calmly, semi-automatic rifles smoking in his hands.
What?
Cap vaulted over the table. The vigilante dropped his weapons and fell back against the wall. Cap glared down at him.
You murderous piece of trash!
The Punisher wiped blood from his face and slowly looked up.
They were bad guys, Cap. Thieves, killers,
shut up!
Cap's boot smashed into the Punisher's jaw. Before the Punisher could react, Cap reached out and pulled him close. He slammed his shield down onto the Punisher's throat, barely pulling back in time to keep from breaking his neck.
Cap!
But Captain America barely heard him. The world had narrowed down, become a tiny tunnel of battle. No more Registration Act, no more secret prison, no more resistance and thunderbolts and 50 state initiatives, just Cap and his enemy. A mass murderer in a skull t-shirt who leaned bruised and bleeding against the wall before him. Just Cap and his biggest mistake. He pulled his fist back, coiled to strike.
Fight, you coward!
No, not against you.
Cap stared at him for a long moment.
Get him out of here. And throw his guns in the incinerator.
Cage moved to join Tigra, and they each took Punisher by an arm. Still, the Punisher made no move against them.
Let's get the medics in here. Have them remove those bodies.
Patriot leaned over to Spider-Man.
Why wouldn't he hit Cap?
They're both soldiers. Cap's probably the reason Punisher joined the service. Same guy, different war.
Wrong! The Punisher is insane.
I know, Cap. I know he is.
Cap turned away, his fists clenched. He squeezed his eyes tight, filling his vision with red haze.
This changes nothing. Pre-attack countdown begins now. Team Liberty, meet me in 10 minutes for a strategy session. The rest of you, get ready.
He gazed across the assembled faces. They all looked alarmed. More doubtful than before. They weren't an army, Cap realized. They were individuals, accustomed to working alone or in small groups, And tonight, they would go up against the full might of Stark Enterprises, SHIELD, and the United States government. But they would have to do. Too much was riding on this. Their own freedom and that of their friends. The future of their very way of life. Tonight, one way or another, that future would be decided.